Dear comrades and friends, first of all, let me begin by saying how honored and excited I am to be here. In fact, I'm overwhelmed with emotion. Finally, for the very first time, the struggles of the Kurdish people and the Zapatistas have met physically today. I have very many greetings to bring to you. I bring greetings from your counterparts, Comrade Abdullah Öcalan, the founder of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, who was abducted in Kenya as a result of a NATO operation and is kept at an island prison in Turkey, guarded by 1,000 soldiers, sends his revolutionary greetings and solidarity. He values such discussions immensely and wishes success to this conference. I bring greetings and solidarity from your comrades in the mountains to the EZLN, the women and men who resist the fascist forces and capitalism in general, no matter where they are, in Iran, Syria, Iraq, or Turkey. I bring the greetings and solidarity of the Kurdish people to the people of Chiapas, from the people of mountains to the people of the jungle. As they cannot come, I have come in their stead. Your comrades in the mountains and the Kurdish people at large would also like to commemorate those who fell in search of truth and free life in Mexico. Comrades, we are geographically worlds apart, but our struggle for a free life is one and the same. I have come to learn about your struggle and also to talk about the struggle of my people. Today, I have words and vision from the struggle of the Kurdish people, the people of the mountain and fire. Kurdish people live in an area that spans across the present territories of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. Thus, the Kurdish question necessarily influences most of the region. A solution in one part of Kurdistan also affects other parts of Kurdistan and neighboring countries. The other way around is also true. The destructive approach of actors in one country may have negative effects for the solution of the Kurdish question in one of the other countries. Kurds are often called the people of the mountain or the children of fire, as the Kurdish landscape is rugged and they come from the Zoroastrian tradition. The Kurdish people have been fighting colonization or conquest by foreign powers since times immemorial. Whether it is the imperialists of capitalism or the empires of the past, the rugged Kurdish landscape is practically made for resistance. Resistance has thus become part of our life and our culture. The ability to imagine, amongst other things, must be what makes humans human. Imagine an alternative way of life and living. This is exactly what Abdullah Öcalan and other founding members of the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, began doing in the late 1960s and early 1970s, imagining. Who could escape the revolutionary power and the after effects of 1968? It just transformed how people view the world, as well as liberalism. Öcalan and his friends were the byproduct of this wave. They imagined that there can be a life which had no room for oppression, exploitation of women, colonization, and national chauvinism. They imagined that the Kurdish people existed and had the right to continue their existence. This may today sound an easy thing to do and to imagine, but back then, the cultural and physical genocidal policies, extent of auto assimilation, as well as the internal political structures established by the colonizers in terms of political parties and collaborators, made it really difficult to imagine anything at all. But they dared, and they paid for the price. Because what is life drained of freedom? Not too many people had heard about the alternative paradigm the Kurdish people were discussing and attempting to implement until recently. But today, suddenly, symbolized by one town that nobody had ever heard about, Kobani, we are witnessing something revolutionary. Just when many had been convinced that revolutions are not possible, even if possible elsewhere, not in the Middle East, and certainly not in Kurdistan. The founders of the PKK came from different walks of life, different beliefs, ethnicities, and women ever since the early core group. This combination of rural and urban youth, most of whom were students, gave a tremendous dynamism to this young movement. Such a combination also did not allow for dogmatism. Thus, feudalism, chauvinism, nationalism, male domination in general were rejected even from the onset and gave the movement a good base upon which to develop itself. It would be unfair to claim that the depth of understanding and analysis of the women's question was as profound back then as it is now. We would be giving a magical attribute to what happened over the 40 years if we claim that. On the contrary, although there was a solid beginning, the view on women's enslavement and thus freedom deepened as a result of participation of women in larger numbers and due to the dialectic approach of Abdullah Öcalan as the main strategist of the movement. Another important factor is the complexity of the Kurdish question itself. There was no easy answer or solution to the Kurdish question, and the status quo formed around it. And it did not give way to an easy solution. The Yalta Agreement between the Soviet Union and the US exasperated the already terrible situation of their denial and policies of elimination. Thus, there was no room for deception. All forms of dominant ideologies or even venues that assimilated movements into the system were shut before the PKK. This, I believe, led to the true freedom quest and to see the disguise over different movements and ideologies. Let's have a short look at the situation. Kurdistan was divided as a result of international agreements, and its denial was ensured internationally. Since it was divided between four separate states, two of which, Iran and Turkey, have a tradition of hegemony in the region and the greater world, it has been difficult to make headway in any part without four states uniting against it. Feudal structures within the Kurdish society had been turned into collaborators with the state to a great degree. This served as an instrument to control the society. Therefore, any movement that attempted to struggle for Kurdish rights would either be demonized from the beginning or placed under control so that it would not depart from traditional roles. The reason for the several transformations that both Comrade Öcalan and the PKK went through can be summarized briefly as follows. All the points mentioned earlier created huge difficulties for PKK to organize itself, especially because the Kurdish people had already reached a point of auto-assimilation. Therefore, from there, Öcalan reached conclusions on how the system implements its cultural hegemony. Due to Kurdistan being an international colony, discussions on what independence and dependence actually mean were on the table early on. All regional and world powers wanted to control any given Kurdish movement and use them against one another to further their own policies. Thus, policies of the Soviet Union and other real socialist states, as well as different powers, were analyzed early on. During the 40 years of struggle, Öcalan and the PKK were not only able to evaluate the practices of real socialism, feminism, national liberation, and other alternative movements and practices, they also evaluated their own praxis and tried to understand what was wrong. Why was everyone reproducing the system? In 1980, there was a military coup in Turkey. The freedom movement was still very young and not yet fully organized. Let us not forget that the PKK was founded in 1978. It was one of the harshest military coups of all times. Many were killed. Thousands of people were arrested, thrown into prisons, and put through horrendous tortures. Many more hundreds of thousands of people were gathered in schools, sports stadiums, and tortured. Soon, the renewed obedience of the society was reinstalled, or so they thought. The resistance and struggle of the PKK members in the notorious Diyarbakır prison, amidst them the resistance of women, and especially that of the founding member of the PKK, Sakine Cansız, soon became almost a mythological narrative in 1980. The freedom aspirations of Kurdish people, especially that of Kurdish women, but more specifically Sakine Cansız, her relentless struggle and her resistance in the face of the horrendous torture she was subjected to, paved the way for women to play a huge role in the days to come. Comrade Sakine was murdered in Paris in 2013 by the Turkish state and remains one of our legendary martyrs of the Kurdish people. You'll find her photo on the dia. She's the redhead with really curly hair. Mythology, religion, philosophy, and positive science structures are tightly intertwined with the history of capital and power accumulation. They therefore protect one another's interest. The positivist and functionalist theory of society, especially the linear development approach of society, from primitive to slave-owned to feudalism, from there to capitalism, was severely criticized. In connection with this, Öcalan broke away from equating the society with a particular class and thus from equating the society with that of rulers. Analyzing the practices of alternative movements came to the conclusion that a free life cannot be established by using the tools that are used to enslave the society, women, nature, and everyone else. Thus, power and state structures must be replaced. Capitalism is not unique in that sense, but a continuation of the 5,000-year-old patriarchal society, something that was present throughout history, but only had the chance to become the dominant system in the last 500 years. Therefore, Abdullah Öcalan reached the conclusion that the anomaly was capitalism itself. At the beginning, the women's struggle within the PKK did not transcend the borders of the old left, but it could not be contained by it either. Öcalan's role here is important, both as a strategist and as the political leader of the Kurdish movement. He did not ignore the enslavement of women, nor their desire and struggle for freedom. He, despite negative reactions from male members of the organization, opened political, social, cultural, ideological, and organizational space for women. He stood strongly by this. Women joined the guerrilla forces from the beginning because of the sexism they faced under feudal and tribal structures, as well as the fury they felt in the face of increasing colonialist and exploitative oppression of the Turkish state against the Kurds. People from all walks of life came to wage a common struggle. The very first problem was encountered already. Coming and joining a revolutionary movement on its own was not enough to overcome the characteristics obtained and structured in the colonialist and feudal structures. Problems began to emerge, especially in the approach to women. There was an attempt at regenerating traditional roles amongst the guerrilla forces and party structures. There were those women who accepted the regeneration of these roles, and there were also women who rejected them. Thus, the organization soon realized the severity of the problem faced and established Kurdistan Patriotic Women's Union in 1987. The foundation of this union was the very first declaration of intention to target a unique and separate women's organization. In the 1990s, there was a huge influx of women to the guerrilla forces. This compelled the formation of a new organization within the guerrilla forces. In 1993, for the very first time, unique women units were formed. This meant that they would not be under the direct command of the male guerrillas and would be able to make their own decisions, plans, and thus implementation of those plans. The consequent development of women in self-defense gave the women self-confidence. This led to enormous ideological, political, social transformations. This was the second breakthrough after the heroic resistance of women in Turkish prisons. Indeed, it led to revolutionary changes in how women were perceived within the Kurdish society and by men. Later in 1995, Union of Free Women of Kurdistan was formed. From then on, political and societal work was also taken up amongst not only the women in the organization, but also in the society. At the same time, work for international solidarity also began. It is during these years that Öcalan began talking about a new concept, killing the dominant men. From this date, the women's freedom struggle became more radicalized. They began talking about breaking away from the dominant modernity, mentally, psychologically, and culturally. But they also talked about a project to transform the male in parallel. To this end, education of men was undertaken by women. As 1998 approached, the women laid down the principles of the ideology of women's liberation, and in order to implement them, they formed the PJKK, the Kurdistan Women Workers' Party. In 2000, they widened their organizational and struggle perspective, and the women founded PJA, Free Women's Party. One of the most important achievements of this era is the declaration of women's social contract. However, all these attempts did not totally overcome the limits and the framework of patriarchy. Not only the women's movement, but the whole organization was in search for an alternative. Although the PKK was no longer the old left, it was also unable to come up with a solution that completely broke away from real socialism and thus capitalist modernity. One can define the period between 1993 to 2003 as the transition period to conceptualize an alternative to capitalist modernity. The available theoretical material, past experiences of various other movements, feminism, and the very experience of PKK itself led the movement to conclude that women's enslavement constituted the very basis of all subsequent enslavements, as well as all social problems. Thus, it began to differ from classical Marxist-Leninists. It also differed in the way it began to view the state apparatus, an instrument of power and exploitation that is not necessary for the continuation of human and natural life. Thirdly, its perception of revolutionary violence also changed and eventually framed as self-defense. Öcalan determined that women's slavery had been perpetuated on three levels throughout the 5,000 years. First, there is the construction of ideological slavery. Then there is the use of force. Lastly, there is seizure of the economy from her. As a result, he was quick to make the connection between the depth of women's enslavement and the intentional masking of this fact and the rise of hierarchical and status power within the society. As women are habituated to slavery, the path to the enslavement of the other sections of the society is paved. The enslavement of men comes after the enslavement of women. However, women's enslavement is different in some ways to classical national enslavement. Its legitimization is attained through refined and intense repression combined with lies that play on emotions. Women's biological difference is used as justification for her enslavement. All the work she does is taken for granted and called unworthy woman's work. Without analyzing the process through which woman was socially overcome, not only can one not properly understand the fundamental characteristics of the consequent male-dominant social culture, but also what to build in its place. Without understanding how masculinity was socially formed, one cannot analyze the institution of state and therefore will not be able to accurately define the war and power culture related to statehood. This is something we need to emphasize because this is what paved the way for feminicide and the colonization and exploitation of peoples. The social subjugation of women was the vilest counter-revolution ever carried out. Öcalan points out that the sword of war wielded in state and the hand of the man within the family are symbols of hegemony. The entire class society, from its upper layers to its lower layers, is clamped between the sword and the hand. Capitalism and the nation-state are analyzed to represent the dominant male in its most institutionalized form. Capitalist society is the continuation and culmination of all the all-exploitative societies. It is indeed a continuous warfare against society and women. To put it succinctly, capitalism and nation-state are the monopoly of the tyrannical and exploitative male. It is enough to look all around the world to see a renewed increase in the violence, exploitation, and re-suppression of women. This is not happening in the so-called third world countries, but all over the world. But unambiguously clarifying the status of women is only one aspect of this issue. Far more important is the question of liberation. In other words, the resolution to the problem exceeds the importance of revealing and analyzing it. The resolution to the problem exceeds the importance of revealing and analyzing it. During the last quarter of the 20th century, feminism managed to a certain extent to disclose the truth about women. But the Kurdish Freedom Movement and Abdullah Öcalan take this a step further and to try and develop new models of a free life for society as a whole. I will try to shortly explain some of the concepts developed in this context. The starting point is to analyze society on the basis of a moral and political society, not on class. Morals is defined to be the collective conscience of the society, and politics defined to be its common wisdom. But how do we now work towards this? In order to be able to stop the perpetuation of capital and power accumulation, as well as reproduction of hierarchy, there is a need to create structures for a democratic, ecological, and gender-liberated society. To achieve this, dismantling of power and hierarchy is an absolute necessity. For this purpose, Öcalan calls the lives and past and present struggle of those left outside the system, such as women, peoples, cultures, and craft workers to represent democratic civilization. And he has called the social sciences that shall develop a libertarian perspective, the sociology of freedom. The analysis of democratic civilization he bases on what he calls the moral and political society, or democratic society, the modern version of this historical society. The alternative to the existing capitalist modernity is democratic modernity. What is democratic modernity? Abdullah Öcalan says, and I'm quoting, "I am neither discovering nor inventing democratic modernity. Just as modernism is uniquely named to be the hegemonic era of capitalism, which is the last 400 years of classical civilization, then democratic modernity can be thought to be the unique name for the last 400 years of democratic civilization." Fundamental dimensions of democratic modernity are: 1, moral and political society; 2, ecological industry; 3, democratic confederalism. Democratic confederalism is the overarching organizational principle for society. Democratic autonomies at local levels come together to form democratic confederalism at a more general level. Democratic confederalism is the political alternative to nation state, and it rests on democratic nation, democratic politics, and self-defense. Democratic confederalism will not be limited to self-organizing within particular territories. They will become cross-border confederalisms if the societies concerned so desire. Here, each and every community, ethnicity, culture, religious community, intellectual movement, or economic unit can autonomously configure themselves as a political unit and express themselves. The most fundamental element of the local is its ability to have free discussion and its right to take decisions. Democratic confederalism is open to different and multi-layered political formations. Both horizontal and vertical political formations are needed due to the complex structure of the present-day society. Democratic confederalism keeps central, local, and regional political formations together in an equilibrium. We need to return the moral and political aspects back to the society. Intellectualism has been restricted mostly to the universities. It needs to be returned to all of us. Morals has been replaced by positive law. Politics, on the other hand, has been brought to an almost standstill under the administration of nation-state bureaucracy underneath the disguise of parliamentarianism. This system is not an alternative state formation, but an alternative to the state itself. Our present-day democracies developed after the Roman democracy, which is representative instead of being participatory. Thus, the majority rules and an elite decides on fundamental issues on our behalf. Democratic autonomy, on the other hand, is radical, direct, and participatory democracy, with above all, women's organized participation and decision-making. But ultimately, all sections of society organize and directly participate in decision-making in order to be able to decide on matters that concern them directly and indirectly. To respond to the changes in the theoretical framework, the women's freedom movement went through several restructuring periods. There was a need for a confederal women's organization that transcended party structures and was more flexible and comprehensive. Thus, in 2005, KJB, which is the Eminent Women's Community, was founded. As a result, action and organizational restructuring took place in order to implement the formation of the new paradigm based on democracy, ecology, and women's freedom. KJB was established to become the coordination point between the self-defense forces, social organizations, the Women's Party, PAJK, and the Young Women's Organization. In September of 2014, Women's Organization went through another transformation and has, in the meantime, changed its name accordingly to KJK. This transformation was needed in order to equally and comprehensively deal with the needs of the society and the formation of required institutions in order to continue with the transformation of men, democratization of the society, to create the ethics and aesthetics of the free life. Women thus are organizing themselves from the local level to and all forms of decision-making structures. They take all decisions regarding themselves on their own and are represented from the local level to all different levels when taking decisions that concern the whole society. Other sections of the society, the youth, elderly, professions, beliefs, crafts workers, are too organized so that power and hierarchic formations and structures cannot be perpetuated and any attempt is stopped through such mechanisms. If women's slavery has been perpetuated on three levels, the construction of ideological slavery, the use of force, and lastly, seizure of the economy from her, then these three areas must be dealt with simultaneously too in our approaches to alternatives. Therefore, we have intellectual duties and education. When we look at history, we see how the enslavement of women and then the whole society developed. It was first ideological. Indeed, hierarchy means rule by the priest. Thus, there is a need to expose the history of colonization of women. Together with this, women's economic, social, political, and intellectual colonization must also be revealed. This would mean the exposure of the history of humanity for the whole society. The more science and knowledge was tied down to capital and the monopoly of power, the more it began to target moral and political society. Civilization established a monopoly on both science and knowledge, thus detaching it from the society and especially from women profoundly. This in return meant their detachment from life and environment. Economy is the third force after ideology and violence through which women and subsequently the entire society was entrapped and forced to accept dependence. Economy literally means householding. In the woman's order, though, the accumulation was neither for the merchant nor for the market. It was for the family. Thus, there is a true need to turn it into what it should be. But for capitalist economists, only work that is productive and visible is measured in money terms. Thus, the link between women's invisible work and capital accumulation was found when what role housework plays in capitalism was looked into. Those who want to appropriate domestic work without establishing wage relations must do so by means of structural and direct violence. Indeed, this structural and direct violence characterizes all exploitative relationships between humans and nature, industry and peasants, capital cities and colonies. This is one of the reasons why Öcalan considered the man-woman relationship to be colonial at its very core, and thus the woman to be the very first colony. Self-defense is also an important issue, as violence combined with ideological and economical offensives against the women led to obtaining the results. Today, violence is under the monopoly of state. It has the exclusive right to it. Women over the 5,000 years were not easy to oppress. It meant they were burnt as witches. They were buried alive for being born a woman, beaten with or without excuses, and the list can go on and on. But the important thing is that They should no longer leave themselves at the mercy of others, no matter who they are. In times of chaos, such as the one we are immediately going through, the possibility of change is there more than ever. Capitalism is in a systemic crisis and is trying to overcome this by changing and transforming itself. This transformation does not necessarily mean that it will necessarily be a progressive one. On the contrary, reactionary forces all over the world, in different forms and shapes, are trying to impose a more right-wing system on the world population and especially on women. Let us not be fooled by the clouds. This also presents an opportunity for democratic forces to emerge as the big winners out of this chaos. All we need to do is, first of all, break the walls in our heads. As Comrade Öcalan has said, the real achievement of capitalism is its victory over the minds. In the past, when people were poor, they rebelled. Now, they only dream of winning the lottery. Whatever has been constructed by the human hand can be demolished by the human hand. Like Comrade Galeano, like Comrade Galeano said in Oventique, we are the cracks on the walls. Do not let the cracks mend. Let these cracks meet and deepen the cleavages. My friends, this is our story. Let our stories and struggles join to shatter the narrative that capitalism is eternal. What is eternal is freedom and a free life. In Kurdish, the root of the word life comes from the word for woman. Thus, our philosophy and slogan is Jin Jian Azadi. That means woman, life, freedom. Jin Jian Azadi. Kolaval. Thank you. Thank you.